Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game betting odds on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit wynnbet.com. To start winning. Dynasty. Tradecast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Tradecast on the RotoViz Radio Network. Week 13 is in the books, or week 14? Week 13. Week 13 is in the books. Dan is nodding, and I'm joined by the lovely Dan Sanyo as he is brought to you by the RotoViz Radio Network via Blue Wire. Dan Sanyo in your ear holes. How's it going tonight, Dan?
It is going. That is us. That is we. Brought to you, of course, by the lovely RotoViz and Blue Wire. Going to continue on with the report card segment. You know, last week we did quarterback report cards, and this week I think just kind of going to follow suit and go with the old running backs, I believe.
Sounds like what the kids call a plan. All right, so let's get into the show. We're going to start off with a bit of a softball, a slow pitch. I don't think it takes a lot of Dynasty hashtag analysis to give a report card for this player. This player has a new quarterback in Carson Wentz. This player is a second-year player, and he's averaging what the kids call 24.03 PPR points per game, good for the number one overall running back in scoring. The Colts offense has been so weird because it was so abysmal the first, like, you know, four or five games. And now it's been, like, at least presentable. And then Jonathan Taylor has been, like, elite part of the offense. So with Taylor, what are you taking away from his, you know, first 13 weeks of the season?
Well, I mean, we kind of talked about it in the offseason and a lot, honestly, last year about Jonathan Taylor. And my issue always was that there wasn't really any room for growth in his value because he's been, I believe, a top five asset now for a year straight. He's been going in that top two to five range. And obviously now he's pretty much locked in at one, unless you're a wide receiver lover like Nathan and I, and you're probably going either Chase or Jefferson, but it's been impressive. You know, the last time he wasn't an RB1 in weekly scoring was week three against Tennessee. Ever since then, he has been an RB1 every single week, obviously with the one monster game against Buffalo, where he scored over 50, but outside of that one, even if you take that one away, he's still pretty much averaging like 20 points a game, which is absurd. So I think I didn't think maybe we would get to the ceiling as quickly as we did, especially considering the offense and Carson Wentz under center, but Jonathan Taylor is kind of proven what a lot of people thought that he would be. And he's getting the majority of the work. I think the one kind of sour taste left in your mouth, even though it's hard to score more points than he's scoring, would be if he got more involved in the passing game. And that, again, can be a little bit tough considering the nature of the offense.
Considering his like college profile, if you would have told me that we were getting 45 targets, 36 catches in his sophomore year, I would have taken that. And we're in week 13. Like,
right.
That's going to be 50 catches at least by the end of the season. So I think that he's above expectations. Like we talk about, you know, grading on our scale based on what we were expecting. And I know that he showed some receiving chops in 2020, but he's shown even more in 2021 with Wentz at the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he's already matched his catch total from last year, and he's looked a lot better doing it. He's looked definitely more comfortable. So I really do think that even though he's pretty much locked in as the top asset, there is still a little bit of room yet to grow. Chasing the targets alongside all of those carries can be a little bit detrimental to the long-term, you know, effect of a running back, but that's why we chase rookie contracts on running backs. Nathan and I harp on that all the time. Chase these first 4/5 years on these running backs, because that's when you're going to get all of the heavy usage essentially locked in. And every ounce of it, assuming health, is going to be fantasy production.
That, and people continually, even though we see it year after year after year, people continually pay a premium for those 5th and 6th year running backs. So ride the wave of Taylor for the next 4 years and then flip him for a first round startup wide receiver or a, you know, a younger running back. Like, there's not really a fear of, oh, he's going to lose all his value, because you're going to have plenty of time in advance to sell him. Not that you're really concerned about that in 2021, but, you know, when I'm doing a startup, like I'm about to pose this question, and obviously for a 2022 startup, he's in the conversation of Chase, Jefferson, Mahomes, and Kyler as far as Superflex. So I will more often than not going to take the quarterback, even Mahomes, as he's had, like, you know, not a Mahomesian type year the last really 2 years, but he's still been amazing. But I'd still take Mahomes because of the long-term viability, unless it's like, you know, some sort of like a adjusted league where it's like a 4-year league or something like that. But traditional dynasty, I'm going to take that high floor of Mahomes or Kyler at this stage.
Yeah, so I think it really depends on your strategy. I think if you're going into the draft trying to win within your first couple of years, I definitely think you start with Taylor and go a little bit later with the quarterbacks and get some of the older guys that are going to produce maybe not as highly as the potential for a Patrick Mahomes or a Kyler Murray, but it's a lot easier to contend with the likes of streaming Taylor Heinicke and Matt Ryan than it is not wasting necessarily, but using a high pick on a quarterback and then having absolutely no running back. So I probably would be in the camp of taking Jonathan Taylor first if I'm competing. If I'm planning on punting, I'm probably going one of the wide receivers. And if I'm just going to try to go for that lovely, healthy balance, then I'm probably going quarterback. I feel like that's the best way to guarantee yourself some safety and a higher floor is starting quarterback. But, you know, there's a million different ways to play it. We've seen everybody win and the, you know, the different options never stop. So I'm not going to fault anybody for taking Taylor at one. I'm not going to fault anybody for taking Mahomes at one. I definitely think that is the discussion, is which one of the top assets in each, you know, position are we going to go with, depending on your actual strategy.
All right. So it's now time to put pen to paper with our grades. I'm going to go with an A here. Still, like you said, there's still a little bit of room for growth in the passing game, but not much. So he could be an A+ in just a couple weeks, but I'm going to go with an A for Jonathan Taylor through the first 13 weeks of the season.
Because of the consistency, and, you know, this is one of the cases of the player actually performing to their draft value and ADP and whatever trade value. I unfortunately, as much as I would love to stick with just an A, I think I have to give him an A+ because of the fact that, in my opinion, he's outperformed what was set out in front of him. That offense isn't exactly great, but it's built for them to run. And Carson Wentz only has to be mediocre to keep the defense at bay a little bit. But Jonathan Taylor is so good that even when Wentz is bad, he's still producing big numbers. So I'm going to go A plus on Taylor. I think he's lived up to every ounce of the hype, and I don't really see it slowing down for the next couple of years.
All right, let's move on to the RB2 in terms of fantasy points, and that is one Austin Eckler. It is kind of crazy just looking. Obviously, we talked about it last week. The NFL fantasy summary via the RotoViz app is gold. It is pretty. It is awesome. And just looking at the points, the fantasy points for Taylor, 312, then Eckler, 266, and then Mixon, 227, 40 points less and nearly 100 points less than Taylor. So there is clearly like a top two in terms of point scorer so far this year. But Austin Eckler, you know, he's got Justin Herbert at quarterback over the long haul. And I think he's a second contract running back, though, right? We're breaking our rule by liking him right now, right?
He is, in fact, 26. He was drafted in 2017. So this is the start of contract number two. It's an interesting one. Like you said, it's hard. He doesn't really fit our normal, you know, the box we live in. And here's Austin Eckler, 26-year-old running back on an absolutely grand slam offense. And nobody ever really talks about him. His November ADP was at the end of the third round. That seems crazy. I get the age and kind of how we move, but he's putting up points. You know, historically, the touchdowns really hadn't been there. He's essentially doubled his career total on the ground just this year. He had 9 going into the year. He has 8 already, but he also hasn't really been the feature back except for about half of last year, three quarters of his games last year. And with Justin Herbert there and Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, that offense, man, it's looking really good for Austin Eckler and the remainder of his contract. So even though we do desperately despise the second contracts for running backs, he's got some of the higher ceiling than any of these other second contract RBs do.
Because of the pass catching and the quarterback. Those are the two huge things that can kind of extend the career of a running back.
Exactly. And he's absolutely shown his receiving chops. In 2019, he had 108 targets and 92 catches. Last year, he only played 10 games. He had 54 catches. This year, he has 56 through 12. Slowed just a touch, but he's also missed some time, hasn't he? Or he's been maybe dinged up.
No, he hasn't missed any games.
He's maybe been dinged up. I don't know. Either way, this to me feels like it's a smash at third round value, especially in startups. People fear that number and think the Chargers are going to move on or maybe they're only going to throw. Well, guess what? Eckler's pretty important in that passing game too. So this to me, it feels like one of those points don't match the ADP.
Yeah. And I'm going to give my grade here of an A-. And the only reason why it's an A-, he's great, a great value for Dynasty. He's perpetually been more valuable. His points have been worth more than his fantasy value. But in 2021 so far, he has been a hair bit of a boom or bust. 67% of his games have been RB1, including a 41 and 34 point performance. But he does have 3 games of RB3 or lower. So, but all granted, those RB3 performances were 11, 9, and 11 points. So those aren't killing you necessarily. But in terms of like a redraft, if you were drafting Austin Eckler as your RB1, you probably aren't loving an 11 point performance. But yeah, I think that would be the only like fret I would have with Eckler is that like, hey, maybe that 41 point game, let's sprinkle that on the 9 a little bit.
Yeah, if that would be nice if we had the option of hitting like a league average or a weekly average or something. I'm going to hit him with a solid A. I think his ADP doesn't match his production whatsoever. And the one, like you kind of mentioned before, the one little tick is his trade value is never going to be anywhere near his ADP or his production. It's one of those. It's just kind of a strange asset where even though you are taking him in the third round, you're probably not trading Austin Eckler for anything close to like a third round startup value. And his production is probably closer to like a first round startup value. So I'm going to go with a solid A. He's outproducing what he's cost. And even though he is a little bit older, I think there's a bright few years here still in LA.
All right, let's move on to a player who has not been as impressive as Jonathan Taylor and Austin Eckler in 2021, and that is one Saquon Barkley of the New York Giants. Saquon, he's been dinged up. He was dinged up in the preseason. He's been dinged up in the regular season. But don't let that distract you from the fact that he just has not been good at running the football in 2021. Like, it is hard to watch and hard to comprehend a guy who – and someone brought up that, you know, in college, in his early years, he was a bit of a boom-bust play in terms of, like, his runs. Like, he would probably have 100 yards every game because he would hit a 60-yarder every game. He's just not hitting those long runs anymore. And without that, he's going to average, like, 3.4 yards per carry or something like that. So with Saquon Barkley, he's averaging 12.35 points per game with 30 catches. There's just no way, like, I feel like, yes, there's people who are obviously following fantasy points, things like that. But if you asked me, you know, if I went to sleep for 2 months and you asked me, hey, Saquon or Eckler, I would have been like, are you smoking something? Like, obviously Saquon. but I would be hard pressed to find an argument where you're taking Saquon over Austin Eckler.
And what's crazy there too is Saquon will continue to go two rounds ahead of Eckler, even with the scoring differential. People are in love. They're head over heels with Saquon Barkley. And I get it. He's super attractive on paper, but he has not been good for 3 years. Like, I don't get the infatuation at this point. The Giants are awful all around. They have horrible management. Daniel Jones sucks. There's no way that they're coming out of this. Now, all of the talk we had, like, in the preseason, and I've been on the train of sell Saquon, sell Saquon, sell Saquon. And all of the talk we had about Detroit with DeAndre Swift and how bad teams don't really put out that many productive running backs. Well, I think we were right. We were just wrong on the player. It was Saquon Barkley all along. And I didn't even not like him from that perspective. I knew that was part of it, but the hype had just gotten overwhelming. He was a top two or three asset for, I mean, it's been, what, 4 years almost now that he's been a very top of the iceberg asset.
Yeah, I mean, he was a top of the iceberg asset the moment he joined the league, and this is his 1, 2, 3, 4th year in the league.
And his only usable year was his rookie year, even his sophomore year, even though he kind of went off. After the injury started to pile up, that's been it. Obviously, he didn't play really in 2020. This year, he's missed, I think, 4, maybe 5 games. But he has not looked like 2018 Saquon. He has not looked like Penn State Saquon. This is probably one of those cases of the running back has just been completely used. I mean, the life expectancy on a running back is 4 years, 4.5 years, something like that. And I think, unfortunately, he used most of his gas in college.
Yeah, if you would have told me, I'm doing a lot of retrospective and comparisons here, but like, if you'd have told me after 2019 that Saquon would only be 50% top 24 weeks in 2020 and 2021, granted, there's been injuries throughout that, but he's played 10 games and he has 5 top 24 weeks. Like, I'm going to kind of like a top 12 tight end. It doesn't take a lot to be a top 24 running back at all. And Saquon has 5 of those games in the last 2 years.
And as far as grading goes, you know, obviously with the injuries and whatnot, it's kind of hard. You almost want to give him like an incomplete, but I mean, it's like as close to an F as you can possibly get without really being an F, because he's still retaining some of this dynasty value somehow. Obviously, you're not selling him for a first round asset at this point. At least in most cases, there are some owners that are still in love with Saquon Barkley. Why I don't know. But he's retained some of this value, and not many other assets could do that with this kind of stinker of a season, or season, and I guess 2 seasons at this point. So I'm going to say D minus, just because of the value retained.
Yeah, I'm going to give a D solely because I'm hoping, not even because I have Saquon Barkley in a bunch of leagues, but I'm hoping this is all Daniel Jones' fault, that in 2022, someone other than Daniel Jones be a quarterback and it'll like be the fountain of youth for Saquon Barkley.
There we go.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk. but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. On to a rookie running back in the Denver Broncos, Javonte Williams. What do you think of this young runner, Daniel?
Well, I wasn't the biggest fan. I thought he was going to be good, not great. He's looked decent. I still don't see greatness quite yet. And that, of course, is coming off of a 30-point week against Kansas City. So, Javonte really hasn't gotten...
By the way, Kansas City is the most bipolar defense to ever live.
It's so strange. That whole team is bipolar. I don't understand how they do it, but... this is kind of Javonte's first looks at real RB1 share. Back in week 9, he had 17 carries and did a lot with that against another very bipolar defense in Dallas. And now this week with Melvin Gordon, I believe, out or at the very least limited, he had 23 carries for 102, and he also had 6 catches for 76 and a touchdown. So that is kind of what we've been hoping to see out of Javonte. He hadn't been consistently used in the passing game. I guess if you want to go with consistency, getting like 3 targets a game, that would be consistent. But this one, he had 9. His previous high was 7. And he did more with his looks this week than I think he's done all year. And again, Kansas City's defense isn't exactly, you know, the 86 or 84, whatever year it was, Bears. But he looked okay, probably slightly above average. I still don't see a true RB1 in Javonte Williams, but it doesn't matter what I think. If the Denver Broncos love him, which they seem to clearly like him quite a bit, I do still see a committee backfield. But once he gets that RB1A role, I don't think there's going to be much turning back. I think he's got a hold on it.
Yeah, with Melvin Gordon kind of like holding him back throughout the first like half of the year at least, he's still 18th in NFL in attempts for running backs and 18th in NFL in targets for running backs. So, you know, you have to assume that Melvin Gordon exits stage left in 2022. So with that, I think that Javonte is like locked into top 10 RB volume. And so, like you said, I'm not sure how much the talent really matters. Granted, I think that he's looked better than I expected him to be, but I think part of that was just my ETN bias. Was like when people started like trying to say Javonte was better than ETN, which still is not the case. But I was basically just like, "There's no way." But now he's looking like a good NFL running back. Like I don't think he's as good as ETN or some of the other top tier backs, but I do think he's going to be good enough with the volume that he's going to get in 2022. So. It is one of those things that it's definitely this week is not the week to buy after his 29.8 performance and 20.1 the previous week. But I'm not sure really when the time will be. I mean, maybe like if Melvin Gordon comes back and takes back a large share of the carries, but I don't think it's really going to scare very many dynasty managers off.
Yeah. And I mean, he's steadily risen up the charts a little bit here too. Obviously the less that they use Melvin Gordon and the more that they use Javonte, we kind of get a better look at what the future may hold. And another thing that could potentially be holding him back a little bit is who they have under center with Teddy Bridgewater. And I've always been a fan of Teddy, but he does limit the offense, not quite as much as Jalen Hurts limits an offense, but he definitely limits it. They're not, you know, no defense is really afraid of Teddy taking over a game. So they kind of can scheme to cover everybody. But I think if, you know, let's say Aaron Rodgers comes to town for 2022, or Russell Wilson comes to town for 2022, or maybe Denver has other plans and goes and gets another big name quarterback from wherever, however, that's going to be huge for Javonte Williams, assuming he's going to hold on to that 1A position, which I think we all would assume at this point. And the one big question for me, Nathan, is aside from his grade, is he a clear RB1 in Dynasty to you? And if so, how high do you think we should have him?
I think that some people are putting the cart before the horse a little bit by saying like he's the RB3 overall in Dynasty or thereabouts. But I'm going to guess like when we go through our, you know, we're doing report cards in December and we're getting our rankings out in January. I'm going to guess that when we get our rankings out, he's probably going to be like the RB7 to 9 range.
So here's my follow-up. Would you trade Saquon Barkley for Javonte right
yes.
now?
Yes. Yes. I think Saquon's cooked.
as do I. So I'm going to go with a B+ on Javonte. I still am not the biggest of fans, but I think he's doing pretty well with his limited touches. And when he is getting that full-time role, he's done as much as you really can do with that. So I think it's a very easy B+. Once he fully takes over, it'll be in that A category. And like you said, some people say RB3, it's probably 8 to 10 for me. And definitely above Saquon Barkley.
All right. So before we get into the latter half of the program, I want to tell you about RotoViz. That's right. This radio network is on RotoViz.com, and you can get a RotoViz.com subscription by going to RotoViz.com and going to promo code RVRadio2021. It's the best Christmas gift, the best Hanukkah gift, even though that's over, best Kwanzaa gift, all the gifts that you need this holiday season are with RotoViz. I'm sure that all the listeners listening, your wives and your sisters and your cousins and your brothers, everyone, the whole family needs a RotoViz subscription. Don't go telling them they can share a password. No, every single one needs their own login, or you know, Uncle Nathan is going to be knocking on your door with coal. So, get your RotoViz subscription, RV Radio 2021, and get your RotoViz on. Now we want to talk about a player who, when he was drafted, was a RotoViz favorite, and the masses clowned. This was even before, Dan, this is before we were on the RotoViz radio network.
True.
People clowned RotoViz for their love of Cordarrelle Patterson. Little did they know that RotoViz was planning for the, you know, 10th year breakout. Or whatever Cordarrelle Patterson is. We are talking about him on the RB report cards. We know he's currently a wide receiver on MFL. That is I love MFL. One of the most egregious mistakes they've made in recent memory is not switching Patterson to an RB in February or in August. But in February of 2022, he will be a running back. I am confident in that. So we're going to talk about his dynasty value as a running back, even though he won't be that until February. Dan is smirking. So are you trying to say there's a chance that he's not a running back on MFL in February 2022?
No, I just love the predict the 30-year-old breakout of Cordarrelle Patterson. You know, when he came in 2014, he was going mid-second round. Like, he was 2013. He was going mid second round in startups, you know, following the rookie season, and everyone kind of thought the sky was the limit. Well, little did they know that guy can't really run routes, can't really play a position, at least the wide receiver position. And all of a sudden Atlanta says, let's just try him at running back and see what happens.
The crazy part is that the Vikings and Patriots played him at running back. They just never like stuck with it.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty darn clear that wide receiver wasn't the move, and just getting him in space and providing him lanes was really all that you needed. And Atlanta took full advantage of that. Now, I don't think there's a huge dynasty change here. I still think he's going to be your redraft type asset, but he, even though he is 30, he doesn't have a ton of tread on the wheels because he's pretty much only done kick and punt returning over the last like 8 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever it's been. He doesn't have a lot of wear and tear. So I do think that there is a little bit of a window here on Cordarrelle Patterson outside of just 2021. Now, he is the RB6 in fantasy points at the running back position. I think he's something like 10th in points per game. But he has been, I mean, it's been such a fun story just to follow because of, you know, he was perceived as dead in the fantasy community just because he became a special teamer. And all of a sudden, he's putting up RB1 weeks pretty much every other week. About half the time he's in RB1, the rest of the time he's in RB2. So I don't think there's a ton of dynasty value here, but I do think that there is some gains to be made with Cordarrelle Patterson.
See, I do think there's dynasty value to be had, especially once the RB switch happens. I think that he's going to gain value, especially in leagues that, you know, mandatory start two RBs. In a recent mock draft, I select, and you can tell me how crazy this is, I selected Cordarrelle Patterson at 7.04 in a Dynasty Startup mock. And that was over Darnell Mooney, Tyler Lockett, Kadarius Toney, Leonard Fournette, Michael Gallup, James Conner, Kareem Hunt. I think that some of those players might have a higher floor long-term than Patterson, but what he's done in 2021, if he's able to do that for like two more years, like that's easily paying off the price tag of a seventh round starter pick.
Well, and you mentioned who's actually going to be a future topic here. Leonard Fournette, who I definitely wouldn't have taken him over Leonard Fournette, but I mean, I guess I don't hate the value, especially if you're chasing RB points. And like you mentioned, you know, come February, he is going to be listed as a running back across what should be every platform. And that's a huge advantage. If you can get somebody that plays every position on the field, but can get listed as the running back, there's so many avenues to score points. So, I mean, obviously I think you have to go like A+ as a report card for Cordarrelle Patterson, just because the cost to acquire was zero and the fantasy output has been, you know, as high infinity. It's a sideways eight at this point.
Yep, A+ for Cordarrelle Patterson. The only part I don't like about it is that I dropped him in all my leagues like 5 years ago. All right, let's move on to a player that you probably didn't drop in any of your leagues, but and he is the RB4 on the season, and it is one Leonard Fournette, playoff Lenny, Lombardi Lenny, Leonard Fournette, Tampa Bay. He has rejuvenated his career. A year ago, he almost got cut. He almost got cut like in the beginning of December last year. And I know, like, you know, write a movie, yada, yada, yada. But he has legitimately gone from like in when he first got to Tampa, I was like, okay, he's going to be like a year by year asset. He's going to be a guy who like is going to score points, but is never going to be, you know, reliable week to week. He is now that guy that's reliable week to week. And I think he's smart enough to know, like, you know, who's feeding him, and that, like, I don't think he's going to chase a huge paycheck. I think he's going to continue to play for the Bucs and continue to have Tom Brady as his quarterback, because I think that if Fournette goes to a subpar offensive situation, he goes back to where he was in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, the Tampa deal does definitely feel like it was a wake-up call. You mentioned almost being cut, and now all of a sudden you're an RB1 as far as scoring goes. You're not necessarily an RB1 as far as dynasty value goes, but he definitely has turned a corner. He looks like Lenny of old, and obviously having Tom Brady and all of those other weapons around makes it much easier to produce. So he doesn't really have to be great. He just has to be average, and the points are definitely going to be there. I'm still a little bit sour because I'm just going to continue to blame him for ruining Ronald Jones, even though Ronald Jones is just probably bad. But yeah, I think, and I also think I made a mistake a couple of weeks ago when I traded Leonard Fournette for Travis Etienne straight up, which sounds like it might be crazy to be upset about, but the way Fournette has looked and the way he's scoring points on a mildly consistent basis has been pretty impressive, honestly. Obviously, he's kind of propped up with two big games. He's got two games over 30 and then only two games over 20, and everything else has been very pedestrian. So even though he's looked good when he's looked good, it's been kind of an average outlook outside of a couple of really, really big games. So I do still think Lenny has a decent amount of dynasty value. I think more than Cordero Patterson, as long as he is a Tampa Bay Buck. Like you said, Nathan, if he moves on, if he goes somewhere else and chases a paycheck, it's not going to work out. He needs to be in somewhere like Tampa. The only other place that really fits that mold would be like Dallas. And obviously they have Zeke and Pollard or Kansas City. Right. So these places that use backs as kind of a rotation and still stick to one for the majority of it is really where Lenny needs to be. And he's got that spot.
Yeah. So my grade for Leonard Fournette is a B+. I'm not really sure what's holding him back from an A, but I guess just, you know, that he's ruining Ronald Jones.
I'm going to go B only because of the consistency issues. I don't love the fact that he's kind of unstartable like 30% of the time. And, you know, and he's really only an RB1 30% of the time. So he goes along, you know, he's kind of all over the place. And he splits his season into thirds. He's either really good, very mediocre, or bad. And there's not really a consistent line like how someone like Jonathan Taylor has, where it's just flat up at 25 points.
Yep. And if you look at his RB3 games, Dallas almost lost, Rams loss, Saints loss. So there you go. The Bucs need to win in order for Leonard Fournette to score points. Let's round out the show with the San Francisco 49ers. We have a pair of running backs that we're going to give grades to. One of them is not going to be a very nice grade. we have Elijah Mitchell and Trey Sermon. I'm going to start off very quickly. Trey Sermon has been a historic disappointment. He's been a Joe Williams stand on the table and bark level of disappointment. Trey Sermon can't even make the active roster. Trey Sermon, you get an F.
Yeah, it's been frustrating. I was a huge fan of Trey Sermon at Oklahoma for obvious reasons. And then, you know, the injury stuff and moved to Ohio State and never really took a stranglehold of that backfield. And he was clearly the best runner, in my opinion. And he's just kind of been pedestrian ever since he started pretty hot at Oklahoma. So that's a tough one. You know, you mentioned the Joe Williams bit. It's another Kyle Shanahan special where they just either overdraft or misuse somebody or misunderstand somebody and it doesn't work out. And then all of a sudden you get saved by the sixth rounder, Elijah Mitchell, who has looked very good, who I think all of us would have expected Trey Sermon to look somewhat like. And Elijah Mitchell, when healthy, has been pretty darn good. I think he's got 400 or 500 yard games, not scoring a ton of touchdowns, at least on the ground, but he definitely makes up for that in the air in an offense that likes to get all of its weapons involved, at least the ones that are capable of being out there. So, I do think that Elijah Mitchell will be the 1A in a Shanahan backfield. I just struggle with giving a lot of value because we do know historically that they like to kind of rotate these guys as much as possible and maybe even like a hot hand scenario. So I don't know what the future holds for someone like Raheem Mostert. Obviously we would expect Trey Sermon to continue to make this team and be better in the future. But the fact that you have rookie Trey Sermon, second round rookie Trey Sermon, who isn't even playing on Sundays, and you have six-round rookie.
He's on IR now, though. So.
True. But even before that, the fact that he was healthy scratch, like, that's not a good sign of things to come. And then you have rookie six-round running back Elijah Mitchell out there just playing lights out. And
he's been banged up as well, but he's been, you know, still playing, of course.
Yep. And obviously Shanahan loves Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson's been back and not a factor in this offense. Like I said, with Raheem Mostert, who knows what the future holds there. But I do think that we probably need to have Elijah Mitchell up a decent ways in our in our rankings in running backs. And, you know, he's probably going to be in that like Cam Akers range, to be honest. I would love to have Trey Sermon. I'll probably be buying some Trey Sermon shares this offseason for pennies. But I do think that, unfortunately, like Nathan, I have to give Trey Sermon an F based on expectations. And you really got to give Elijah Mitchell an A. I loved him as a flyer. I was chasing him in all of my drafts. I liked the opportunity, the potential for opportunity. And I thought the player was good enough to make a difference. And it's been kind of nice to see. And hopefully he continues to rise.
Yep. And Elijah Mitchell, you know, he's been better than expected. He's been very good. And the one thing that we haven't talked about so far yet is the Trey Lance. He's going to be a positive outcome for whoever the running back is. And I'd imagine at this point that Elijah Mitchell's the favorite to be the 2022 Niners RB1 with, you know, a tandem with Mostert and Sermon. But yeah, I picture Mitchell being drafted as like a top, you know, 20 to 24 type running back and him being a value at that price.
I don't know that it's a certainty that Trey Lance is better for the backfield. We thought Jalen Hurts was going to be better for the Eagles, and that really quickly turned into not the same thing.
Yes, I think, but Jalen Hurts is bad, though.
But there's a good chance that Trey Lance is also bad. I think there's a more likely outcome that Trey Lance is Jalen Hurts than Trey Lance is Lamar Jackson. I think there's a really wide spectrum here, and I don't know that Trey Lance is on the top side of it. I think he's probably closer to the bottom side of it. I actually think Jimmy Garoppolo is better for the running backs in this situation because it limits what they can do downfield and allows a lot more looks for what's underneath. Trey Lance has the big arm, but he's also got legs. I fear that he could take a lot of the red zone looks. I fear that he could take a lot of the running looks in general, where they're going to be running a lot more spread option stuff. Whereas with Jimmy, you know, he's stuck in that pocket. He's either handing it off or he's throwing it, you know, over the middle. So I would probably hesitate a little bit to say Trey Lance for sure is going to be better for the offense. I fear it a little bit, but Kyle Shanahan's either been really good or really bad so far. So hopefully this is one of his really good things.
All righty, that should wrap us up. Hopefully this has been a really good podcast in your ear holes. And any last words, Dan?
No, I think you can hit him with the outro.
Kadosh!
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.